Can you imagine social media not being part of your life at all?
No, I couldn't at all.
What would life look like without it?
It's not that I feel like if it never existed, there wouldn't really be a difference. But because it exists, the thought of having life without it and being out of the loop of everything, it just sounds gross.
How would you react if high schools outright banned cell phones?
I think I'd be annoyed just because I'm addicted to my phone, but I think it would be better, honestly. And I know that like social media is getting in the way of how I'm doing in school. So.
This episode of The Harmonious Gentleman is brought to you by our friends at Blind Man Brewing, makers of Central Alberta's best craft beer, purveyors of delicious tacos, and hosts of all kinds of harmonious fun. They don't like to brag about it, but they've won Brewery of the Year in Alberta and Best in Show at the Canadian Brewing Awards. Head to Lacombe and check them out.
Well, if podcast episodes were the rate of inflation in the last 10 months in Argentina, and this is kind of hard to believe, you would know this has to be episode 114 of The Harmonious Gentleman. Can you imagine a 114% inflation rate?
That's percent.
Percentage.
Like over what period of time? Like
it was 10 months ago. So I don't know if that was just for a certain moment in time.
Yeah.
But that's just like what would happen to a society? I just was scrambling to find something more.
Yeah, you were
I didn't
really
follow up.
Well, I'm glad you found something.
But that was seemed like crazy.
Poor Argentina.
Yeah. Where are they at now?
Yeah, I will look that up and get back to you.
They're doing much better, apparently. I don't know. All right.
Yeah. How are you guys doing?
I'm like pretty decent. But you guys find like this week it's finally nice out and sunny out, but it's like howling Arctic winds, and so it doesn't really count.
You think your friends have a sunburn, but it's actually a windburn?
Yeah. Like it's mentally kind of messing me up because you get up, you see the sun, you're like, let's just seize the day, it's spring, and then you go outside and you need gloves on almost.
You can't get off your fence.
Yeah. That's right. How about you, Tyler? How you doing?
Yeah, I'm great.
Your hat's kind of messing me up because it says autumn.
I know, yeah.
But it's spring.
Have you talked about your trip since you were back? Like, is this
not on the podcast?
Oh, okay.
No, I was in the Dominican Republic where it was very hot.
Yeah.
You looked out your window and it looked hot, and you went outside and it was hot.
That's the way it should be.
Not like here.
You would have taken an Arctic wind, probably.
Yeah. But yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. How many students do you guys take along on that trip?
We had 21 students, grade 12 students.
Cool.
And three adults. Mm-hmm. And we...
I thought it was four adults.
Which adult?
Do you not count yourself as one?
Yeah, me and three others.
Okay, oh. Sorry.
Yeah. But we, met with another school and kind of built relationships there. It was really cool. And learned about the culture there, which I've never been there. I knew a little bit about the history of the Caribbean, but it was kind of cool to explore it too.
Do you see any sites that were named after Christopher Columbus?
Yeah, a few.
Interestingly, that's the first place he landed, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I don't think I really knew that until I went there.
Until now, I didn't know that.
I knew. Yeah, I didn't know that, like when we were actually touring through, there's the monument, like a statue of Christopher Columbus, but then there was a church that someone said this was like the church that he found, like the first one that they built here in the Americas. And that's kind of when I realized like, oh, this is the actual first land that you could see where they sailed in from the ocean for the first time. Huh. It was interesting.
Hmm. Is the trip going to be there every year, do you think? Is that the destination for the trip?
I think that's the idea.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
But we need there's a lot of red tape and you have to get the trip kind of approved year to year. So we'll see where it goes. But I got to go with some amazing people, so I'm glad for the opportunity. It was awesome. Cool.
That's neat.
I entered my name to win a hoodie today from Blind Man Brewing with my blood donation, Chris.
Good job, Graham.
So if people don't know what I'm talking about, what should they do?
Yeah, we've had, for the last few episodes, we've been advertising. Is that the right word? Promoting.
Promoting.
A blood drive, because we know that Well, I think the Canadian Blood Services always is asking for more blood and plasma and blood products. We did it specifically to help and encourage our friend Peter, but we all probably know somebody who's maybe sick or ailing, and blood transfusions are often a part of the healing process. Mm-hmm. So if you can get out to donate blood, it's something you can do every 54 days.
That's right.
And now I know that you saw some people at
yeah.
the blood donor site, our friends of the show, Mike and Michelle,
mm-hmm.
Who are also both donating. So
yeah.
we're gaining a little momentum with our blood drive.
Yeah.
And I actually just talked to another listener, Shelley, who kind of appreciates kind of what we're doing, promoting or encouraging people to donate blood. And she told me that it's a ridiculously low percentage of Canadians have donated or donate blood regularly. It was like, I want to say like 5% of Canadians.
Yeah.
Like it's ridiculously low. So we need to get that up even
considering how much of a need they are, it does seem low.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of thinking about it because for a lot of years, I didn't donate blood for most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I never really thought about it. Like, I didn't really realize the need of it, maybe.
Yeah.
And then when I learned about that, it seemed like a no-brainer.
Is this the first time you've ever done it?
No, this was 5 or 6, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which isn't a lot, but no, I want to keep. I want to get on a schedule. Yeah. And yeah. But
good for you.
If you haven't done it before, it's not bad at all, really. No. In terms of, like, it's not even that long. You're there for 15 minutes. It's you get free chips and pop at the That's end. Right.
You can make an appointment so you know that you're not waiting in line.
Yeah, and they're the nicest people ever in there.
This was going to be my confession, but I'll say it now. I went to donate blood, and this is maybe a cautionary tale for others, how it is very easy to do, mm-hmm. but I made a mistake. I went with me and just my 3 children, and they said, "Is there another adult with you?" And I said, "No, but they're good. They'll be fine." And they said, "Well, you can't proceed unless really? There's another adult." So I almost just went and brought my kids to the car and said, "You guys wait here," and went back in. But
shoot.
Ty, that's so funny because I went today and I almost brought Harvey along so we could be part of the process.
They wouldn't have let you do it.
And I asked her. I said, and then she told me that what you just said, they don't, they used to. But now you have to have an adult with them outside of the room. The space where you
who's
get blood.
Not like an adult who is not also donating blood. Mm-hmm. In case you
pass out
or so that was unfortunate. So I did attempt to give blood, but then I went on this trip and now
you probably can't.
I can't for a while. So that was going to be my confession, but I did it early.
Would you say the worst part is answering those questions at the beginning?
No, because you're doing the app like before you even go, and then it's just so it's seamless, it's so easy.
I didn't want another app on my phone, so I had to do it in person.
I don't like apps either. This one is the one to get.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
It's easy.
Shout
it books
out
to it for you.
Canadian Blood Services
seriously
app.
Yeah, like mad props.
Wow,
if that means anything. Yeah,
it means a great deal.
I use the app and it's awesome. And honestly, the worst part is the finger prick before.
Yeah,
like to me, I hate that part. The rest is totally fine. Yeah. And the woman who administered the finger prick today was asking me about what I was up to and stuff. And when I play bass, I don't, my second and third finger, I don't like to get the prick there because of the bass playing. So I told her that. And then she asked,
could she do
why?
Like a toe or?
We didn't take shoes off, but she did a ring finger. And then she asked about the band. And then she followed the band on Spotify on her phone right there.
Whoa.
And then she like put a song on and it was cool. So, and the podcast.
So
too.
You got to donate blood to your own song. That's cool.
Sounds like a cool idea for a song. What else is going on? Is that it? Are we good? Are we caught up? Chris is hosting. It's lovely to be in your home, Chris.
I notice you're wearing a Vancouver Canucks hat, Graham.
I know. It is the season.
Pretty excited about the playoffs?
Yeah, you guys too. Must be. Mm-hmm. We got the top 2 teams in the Pacific Division going for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet. When this episode comes out, it'll be a week into the playoffs, so we'll see.
We'll have a few games under our belt. Yeah.
Excited right now, there's been 0 games played, so we're all feeling pretty good.
I think we're all pretty confident. I think we expect our teams to go on and meet in the second round, and that's going to be awful, and we may have to do a podcast break.
We should watch a game while recording.
I couldn't handle it, I don't think. Could you?
You couldn't handle it? How do you think I feel?
I don't know.
Surrounded by Oilers fans. I there's no way I can do that. But
we'll
I could try
about
for
later.
The podcast. Yeah. If we want to model being harmonious.
Yeah, that's actually a good point.
We could record during intermissions.
I see what you're saying. I get it now that I'm thinking about our theme.
People always want us to argue about stuff more. Like, that's the emotion if we did that.
Yeah.
If it's like intermission 1 and the Canucks are down 4-0, it's going to not be happy in here for me.
Yeah. Hmm.
Cool.
That all might right, guys. Be our lowest listened to episode.
Yeah, that's true. That and ghosts. All right. Well, this is my episode tonight, guys. And I think this will be a two-parter. I just have a few different things we can talk about. And I have a potential guest for next time. So we're going to keep it. We'll start the topic tonight and see okay. where it goes. So,
are you going to tell us what it's about?
Sure. Yeah. It's you guys would have gotten an email this week probably from the district. A survey.
Yeah.
About cell phone use in schools.
Oh.
And we have to do the cell phone talk.
Okay.
Sure.
We've danced around it for a lot of years, but I feel like in many ways it's coming to a head in the news and in schools. And research coming out in books, and I feel like it's kind of the topic of the day.
Yeah.
And I've wanted to do an actual deep dive on this for a while, so this is going to be...
Listeners, just so you know, I'm realizing for the first time, Graham does have a pile of stuff, like pamphlets, papers, a big book.
Yeah, it's like doing an episode with Peter Rockhold.
<That's true.
laughs> Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I could use a little bit or a lot of it. We'll kind of see how it goes, but that's what we're going to do tonight. So put your... frickin' phones away and we're gonna start.
This segment is brought to you by Cilantro and Chive. Delicious and creative dishes, a huge variety of locally crafted drinks, and building community in Red Deer and Lacombe. They're the gents' favorite place to grab a bite.
All right, guys. So I've wanted to do an episode about cell phones for a very long time. And we have definitely mentioned it in the past with our Twitter usage and our social media usage. And so we'll see how this goes. Interrupt me if you need to, if I, you want to say something. But I'm just going to start with, I feel like right now there's a movement kind of brewing. There's a state in the United States, I think it's Florida, trying to ban social media for teenagers under a certain age. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's research coming out. And we just got a survey in Red Deer Public. And the students got one, I think, the same survey, I think. And parents, yes. Right? I think it went to everybody.
They had seen it, my students. Yeah.
Yeah. And it seems to point to them deciding if they want to have more of a cell phone policy in schools, whether it looks like a banning a cell phone or whatever. But before I jump in, I think the danger with this topic for me is I just want to jump in and I want to pile on cell phones and I want to be upset about social media and I want to be this old man who's mad at technology. But I'm also aware that I think anytime there's been a new rapid rise of any technology, whether it's radio or TV or video games, there's usually a moral kind of backlash to it, right? There's some sort of it's bad for you or it's rotting your brain. Mm-hmm. It's not a new phenomenon to have old people like me upset about new technology. Does that make sense? So right. I just think it needs to be measured if we're going to talk about it. But I personally believe this is different than all those things. I do think it's different than all those things. But
can I ask why you think that?
I think it's different because...
Is it because you're almost 40 now? No, you are.
Yeah, that could very well be, actually. But I think it's a few things. I think the main thing is the amount of time people use this compared to those past other ones, but also the nature of algorithms and, right? And the direct assault on attention. You know, it makes sense. We'll get into it, but I mean, do you disagree, Chris?
Not at all. Okay. I just wondered why you thought it was different.
Yeah, and I don't want to be I was watching when preparing the episode. I was watching a few videos that were maybe on the other side saying hey, we shouldn't overreact to this. We always overreact to technology and stop being so.
But are those were those videos 5 or 6 or 7 years old?
No, there was one that funny enough, I was getting this episode ready and it came out. The YouTube channel is called Some More News and it's kind of a comedy, left leaning. I quite like it actually for a lot of, I do watch them sometimes. I don't always agree, but I like their stuff. It's funny. But this time he actually goes after the book that I brought and read specifically, which is a pretty popular book right now. And so I really enjoyed actually hearing this perspective that generally I agree with. I was thinking, I don't agree with this actually. I actually think this is worth getting upset about or at least, getting into it. Anyway, so I felt like every day there's a new article, surveys, books, videos, and I feel like it's time. So the way I sort of thought about this at first is I'll start with you, Tyler. You got the survey.
Yeah.
Just to be clear, the survey just talks about do cell phones help in schools? Do they hurt in schools? Could we take them out of schools? It was a bunch of questions. What were your thoughts on the survey when you got it?
Like the quality of the survey?
Not necessarily that, but
wasn't a great survey.
When you saw the survey, what were your thoughts? Are you happy they're doing it? Are you?
Yeah. Yeah. And I, like you, I've seen a lot of the coverage of this topic and I'm concerned about it. So I was glad to see that there was some kind of movement from like a, this is like Alberta Ed, like a provincial level. It sounds like they're considering, like one of the, something I read, I don't think it was right in the survey, it might have been the preamble, it mentioned a ban. It was like, how would you feel about, or the purpose of this survey is to see how people feel about.
Do they define a ban? Like you cannot bring your phone to school?
But I think that's kind of what the survey gets to, because the questions are a little more, they kind of break it down by age group and when is it appropriate to have phones at school. And I as I filled it out, I intentionally answered it very strongly in one direction. Yeah. Like I was like, when there was a question, when should students have phones at school? If one of the options was never, that's the one I would select.
Yeah.
Even though I'm aware there are like exceptions to some of the, but like, I just think the dangers of, we'll probably get there into what we think, but I was happy to see that there was a survey going around and I actually talked to my students about it, sort of out of curiosity in a way to just kind of burn a few minutes on a Friday, but it was interesting. Yeah. Okay. To talk to them about it too.
I'm curious. I did survey a bunch of students. I'm curious if what I heard is what you were hearing from yours too. I
guess
we'll see.
Yeah.
Chris, how about you? Sounds like Tyler, your reaction was positive in terms of you're glad they're doing, they're at least questioning or they're moving towards something of that nature.
Yeah. Like I think for the sake of the kids, we need to do something about it. So it looks like something will happen.
Yeah.
That's good.
You and I have younger kids, Tyler, and we're in the classroom every day. Chris, your role has shifted in schools a little bit. When you hear about this survey, what are you thinking? Are you thinking?
Interestingly, I'm not aware of this survey, but I've sort of been away from my email for the last couple of days. I'm sure I have it in there. I was at a conference for this Center for Trauma-Informed Practices, which is a North American organization led by a guy named Kevin Cameron, who was the school counselor when the Tabor shooting happened just a couple weeks after Columbine. So he's got this whole protocol for violent threat risk assessment. And one of the major things they talk about is mental health. And some of the things we talked about in the last few days were how technology impacts that. So I don't know about the survey, but I'm curious how things I've recently heard and research that I've heard is going to kind of connect with what we talked about.
So like, I think like,
but yes, I think we need, kids should not have cell phones and adults should use theirs much less than they do.
Awesome.
I'll just throw that out there at the beginning.
So this is, we would probably answer this question in a similar way a few years back, but I do feel like there's a movement now. Like, I feel like we're reaching that point. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I think about like, when I'm nervous, I say like a lot. So I'm going to try not to do that, but like cigarettes, right? I think we reached a point where the research and the data became overwhelming that, okay, you can't advertise to kids anymore.
Right.
And we made the right choice. I feel like this is very similar.
Are we there yet?
Well, I think we're getting close.
Yeah.
That's personally what I think. I'll call, full disclosure, like my original idea for this was to relate it to lobotomies.
Interesting. Well, right? that probably is a good comparison.
Well, it is and it isn't. I also want to be empathetic, especially to parents that have people who they gave phones to, kids, right? Like I think we didn't know a lot of stuff.
Right.
Like all these examples, we just didn't know.
Accidental lobotomies.
Right. And so the lobotomy thing, I think there's a merit to like, you know, lobotomies were very common. And looking back, you think, how could we possibly have done that? I think we're going to look back on kids and social media in a very similar way. And so, but I do want to be careful and not to judge, because anyway, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Another question for you guys before I kind of finish off this first little bit here, because I want to get to the book that I've been reading, but how many years have you taught for in the classroom, Chris?
Since 1999, 2000.
Okay. You're a good 20 years into at least of teaching classroom. And Tyler, you're
like 14. Like
me, 14. So when you reflect on those years of teaching, and I don't care whoever wants to go first, but like, do you see a day-to-day difference in your students in that time? Maybe Chris, you first.
Yeah. And I need to clarify, I'm not in the classroom and I haven't really had a home room for like 5 or 6 years probably.
Okay.
But I think it's hard to say because my role has changed. I was in a rural school, then I was in kind of a small Christian school, then that school got a lot bigger, and my grades that I was teaching got older, so I find it hard to compare. I don't think it's like a fair comparison.
Okay.
Yeah. But I've known a lot of kids over that time, and I think there's been a shift. Yeah.
So mm-hmm. you think there's been a shift?
Yeah.
Okay. Tyler, what do you think?
I like Chris, I've changed the like the grades that I've taught, and so it's hard to compare the whole 14 years, but in recent years I've taught high school, so probably 5 or 6 where I've taught exclusively high school, and I wouldn't say the students have changed a ton in the way they use their phones, but my concern about phone use has changed. Like, I used to be frustrated by the management of the phones, like, as a distraction or, like, how to use them. And I actually was
okay.
a teacher 6 years ago who wanted to integrate phones and use them as much as possible. And, like, but then I would get frustrated by the, like, classroom management and trying to, like, yeah, like that's kind of where my struggles were 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
But now I don't really care about those things at all. And it's more just like when I see the students on their phones, I'm just like saddened by the state
yeah.
of where we're at.
Is it
and
like
I don't hold it against
thing?
Them and I don't, it's just, I think Graham's probably going to talk about
yeah.
research and studies of what this could be doing to them.
Right.
And that's what I'm sad or frustrated with.
Yeah.
More so than like asking kids to put their phones away at being in class. Cause I still do that. I say, hey guys, put your phones away.
We all do. Yeah.
But it's not, I don't hold it against them really. Maybe, and maybe 6 or 7 years ago I did.
Yeah. I think I'm similar to you in that I'm more empathetic now than I was 5 years ago. Like I don't get as upset, but I'm sad a lot.
Yeah.
Like I find myself, in my 12, 14 years, whatever it's been, just connecting with students has been much, much more difficult than it used to be.
Mm-hmm. Like because you're competing with a shorter attention span
yeah.
or, yeah.
Or there's other things. I think there's, yeah, what we're going to get into is more the mental health aspect of it,
yeah.
but even just classroom management and engagement in the classroom. I do think, I mean, it's anecdotal for sure, but I do think attention spans for me are very noticeably less, like very noted, like kids, it's not what I hate saying it's not, you know, back in my day, you know, cause
no, I know,
but I do see this kind of cloud almost that just, it's hard to shake them out. I mean, early on in my teaching career, I'd show a funny YouTube video every Friday and kids were excited about it. Not all the kids, but now, I mean, I've stopped doing that cause no one cares, right? Like, and that's technology yeah. too. That's technology changing too. Yeah. But okay, so we'll end this little segment with Tyler. You had a nice little transition because the book I brought is called The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt, Haidt, written a few books. It's the subtitle is How the Great Rewiring of Childhood is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness.
Can I see the cover? I think I just ordered this. Yes, I did. Probably on my doorstep.
This is not a deep cut. Like this is new and it's very popular, mm-hmm. and it's controversial in some ways too. So I do want to be careful how we read this book and how we go over it. And I do think I'll do more details in their follow up episode about some of the actual data.
Yeah.
But I will talk about what he's suggesting. So yeah, definitely this moves into mental illness. So like we're gonna move away a little bit from classroom management or whatever, but more about like real mental illness and like what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
This segment is brought to you by Veldhuizen Construction. They have been building incredible homes for over 30 years. The Veldhuizen team will guide you step by step through the design and build process. The finished product will be your design, your selections, your beautiful home. If you're looking to build in central or northern Alberta, call today to get started. Go to veldhuizen.ca or see the show notes to get in touch.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. We had wonderful discussions off mic. You guys
are sweating.
You guys are fired. I'm eating. You're fired up already about this. I was a little worried because we have talked about cell phones a lot in the past, and I was wondering if you guys had any juice left. But we're just getting started. So the book that I already referenced, The Anxious Generation, you guys should read it. And maybe once we're done reading it, we can do a giveaway for a listener, because I did buy it, and it'd be cool to give it away to somebody.
Sure.
I like that.
But this guy, this author, I'm not on board with every single thing he says. He does talk about basically two trends that are working towards the youth today. Okay, like two things that have been happening since the 90s, basically, or even the 80s. So social media and cell phones is number two. But number one, and I think the author seems to think that it's just as important and just as damaging, is the coddling, protecting, shielding of a generation of kids. He talks a lot about, well, actually, here's a quote that can set this up.
Like, which is what he's saying is happening right now.
Continuing to happen, but that's been going on for 30 plus years.
Okay.
So he says, this is a pretty great quote. He says, "Unsupervised outdoor play teaches children how to handle risks and challenges of many kinds. By building physical, psychological, and social competence, it gives kids confidence they can face new situations, which is an inoculation against anxiety. Mm-hmm. I'll show that a healthy human childhood with a lot of autonomy and unsupervised play in the real world sets children's brains to operate mostly in, quote, discover mode, with a well-developed attachment system and ability to handle the risks of daily life."
Right on.
Chris, what do you think?
Well, and I can just think of my own childhood when you hear stories and mm-hmm. Instagram reels of, like, when kids were young in summer holidays, you literally went outside after breakfast and you came home when the streetlights went on. Like, those were mm-hmm. our rules.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine even doing that with my own kids. Well, they had quite a bit of freedom, but I think of young kids today, like, there's no way that's how the average kid is.
Right.
And that almost makes it seem like my parents were neglectful. Not at all. Like, we had all our meals together. We were very well cared for.
Yeah.
But we had tons of freedom, and we knew all the kids in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And we knew what everybody's backyard looked like, and we...
Yeah.
But this it's the cultural norms have changed. So it's not individual parents. Well, our last episode was about free will, right? Yeah. Like, it's so, like, our parents were just reacting in the way that was normal for, in the most part, not everybody.
And probably exactly a societal same, push has been to not do that.
Right.
Anymore.
So parents, when you say, like, for me, it would be more difficult for me to allow my kids to wander the city. Like, I was allowed to wander the city when I was a certain age. Yeah. Because of the pressures of society. Like, I would, like,
so
I...
So when you think of that, though, Tyler, like, do you think the city is more dangerous now?
I think so. I don't, but I also question if that's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this is talked about in the book. And again, in a good book like this, we could read it word for word and get... But generally, he does talk about... Especially in the 90s, there was, like, an increase of the 24-hour news cycle.
Right.
And there was a lot of, like, sexual predators and, you know, dangerous people that are luring kids, and, like, a lot of messaging that sort of made parents scared, like, and shaped how they...
Are you saying there was a lot of sexual predators, or just, like, reporting on sexual predators?
Like, yeah, the fear of those things.
Yes.
Right? Even little things like how they design playgrounds now, and... like the safer style, you know, things like that, where it's like we think we're protecting the kids and we mean well. And look, you guys, like, I'm the most protective parent of all of us. Like, I look back and I know I'm overly protective of my kids. Like, I was a helicopter parent. Right. And it is a really good question for us to ask, like, what changed since you were a kid in the last 80 years or whatever. Just kidding.
I wasn't even offended until I thought about that.
No, but like you said, societal norms.
Yeah.
He would contend a lot of factors, one of which is the media and we're scared.
That's right.
What else could it be? Is it that much more dangerous to let our kids do what you did?
Well, I think we have a new technology coming all the time too that is sold to us as being a safeguard or something that could help us keep our kids safe.
Yeah.
So, of course, if you're a parent, you want to keep your kids safe.
Right.
Of course. Right? Like, that's what our parents wanted too.
Yeah.
They didn't have the option to have a cell phone that they could just give to their kid while they're going around. Right? So, the, I don't know if I'm going to jump the gun here, Graham, but like the irony that I feel like is here is that the technology that we think is keeping our kids more safe, like the reason we're justifying giving a young kid a cell phone is in the name of safety and communication and these good things, but it's actually causing more harm than what's actually out there.
Ding, ding, ding.
Can I play the devil's advocate on that? Because I, or is it too late? You guys, you dinged it already.
Well, that's that. No, that's the, that's where we're kind of going.
You can't go back on the ding, ding, ding.
I know.
The ding, ding, ding was like, for sure, this book, Jonathan Haidt, does say it is ironic that we're protecting kids, keeping them inside more, keeping them close to us more.
It's backfiring.
And we're actually, it's harming them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My pushback on the safety thing is that a cynical person, and I'm not saying this is me, but let's say a cynical person was in the conversation with us. Is the number one reason parents are giving their kids cell phones because it's going to keep them safe?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good,
because my question or wonder would be, or the cynical person's question would be, you know what? That thing actually can distract a kid pretty good too. And it requires less work from a busy,
could be
overdone parent who's now both parents are working, everybody's tired. And sometimes the phone can fill in for them.
100%.
And I'm insulting myself too, because my kids also have cell phones, but I don't think it's only the safety
thing. No, I don't think so either. But that's kind of the, I think there's lots of reasons that parents give access to
the term latchkey kid. But, you know what that means?
Yeah.
What a latchkey kid is. I wonder what the term is for a kid who's been brought up by a cell phone. Like, I'm sure somebody's coined a term for that.
It's, yeah.
But I think
it's like the Black Mirror kids.
Whether or not it is safety is reason or not, it doesn't.
It is part of it. I believe that.
But it doesn't, it almost doesn't matter, because both happened coincide. Like, they both happened at the same time.
Yeah.
Right. The protecting of our kids. And I'm not going to go into a lot of it right now, but like, there is a lot in the book about this topic, about like what kids need growing up. And a lot of it is attached to risk taking.
And is there any argument to be made that like a cell phone is what a kid needs? Is there somebody who has that argument?
Well, not in those terms that I've seen. I think people would argue that there are aspects to what cell phones can do that can be positive. I'm sure there's people that would argue that. Even just like phoning your kid to pick him up. So I mean, there's probably logistical things that are nice. Funny watching Seinfeld again, which I've been doing, how many situations there'd be no comedy left if they had a cell phone.
Right.
Right. But anyway, how you had something to say?
Well, there's just lots of, like, I think there's lots of good, valid arguments for how phones can make our lives easier or quote unquote better. Right.
Even for, I wonder like, though, that's the disconnect too, is we've mistaken easier for better.
Well, like the, I don't know, I talked to my students about some of these questions on the survey, and a lot of students, more students than I thought, actually pushed back harder than I thought they would on the idea of not having their phone with them at school. So I asked just their reasons why that would be so difficult, and their reasons, I didn't disagree with them. Like, they said it would be harder for me to, if my ride arrangement for after school changed, it would be more difficult for me to find out from my mom I'm getting a ride with this person. And I don't disagree with that. Like, that's true. It would be harder. They'd have to call the school, or you'd have to figure it out in the morning, or after school someone would have to find you. Right? So that's a true statement. Or at my lunch break, we have an hour-long lunch. I give me more things to do. Like, I don't disagree with that. That's true. And that's not necessarily bad.
But like listening to music too when they're like
listening to music, like, and I love music, so like I agree, it's awesome to be able to listen to music while I'm teaching you. I have my earbuds in underneath my hoodie. But like, so I agree with the reasons, but I just feel like there's this, you're also putting a device in your pocket that connects you to social media that is causing serious harm to you. And that outweighs those things.
Yeah.
But people don't, when you're arguing or you're talking to a teenager about why they should have a phone, that one doesn't come up as much.
Well, it's funny what you said. I noticed that too. I did survey like 90 different high school kids that I teach, and multiple questions, and we'll get to some of the answers later. I want to share some of the answers they had, but like almost all of them agreed that social media is bad for their mental health. Almost all of them, and they had lots of examples. But then almost all of them fought back against
like they're not going to give it up.
They're not going to give it up. So they're aware, and of course they're aware. So are we. Like they're aware, but they also sometimes tie themselves in knots trying to justify it.
Yeah.
So whenever they say things, but here's the thing. I think parents would push back a lot too, right? It wouldn't be just the kids, like for those same reasons.
Does this book talk about, well, my understanding of this research, and you probably know more than I do, is that it's new because we're just seeing a generation now that's grown up with this 100%. Technology. Okay. Because these parents that we're talking about, of our students, they didn't grow up with this. So there's like a, students are the end of the guinea pig
this
era.
Is the guinea pig phase.
Yes. Which again, like it's true, but I do, that's not the most empathetic term to use, but it's true. Like like anytime there's something new, that's what kind of it is. But I think that's the key. The reason why I think things are changing is because I think parents now grew up, we know a little more about it maybe. And we're not smarter. I think we have more experience. And I don't know.
And not necessarily like us sitting here.
No, not
like
that, no.
Parents,
but it's coming.
Society.
It's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to end off, like I love the topic that his first part of the book that talks about kids free playing. He talks about face-to-face interaction, a whole chapter on play, a whole chapter on attunement, like all these things that you learn, you only learn face-to-face. And I got to say, like reading this through, first of all, it made me reflect on my own parenting quite a lot. And I didn't feel great for a lot of it in terms of like how important it is for kids to have time away from their parents to make mistakes and to get hurt and to have somebody who's not nice to them on the playground and have to deal with that. Like these are all things that humans have evolved to deal with. And we've kind of taken most of that away in a lot of ways. And it's not surprising. So even if you just took those interactions away from people and did not introduce social media to them, it'd be quite stark.
Right.
But then, of course, we're going to take a break here and then we're going to talk about part two, which is really what the topic is about, and that's social media and mental health.
This segment is brought to you by the King's University in Edmonton, Alberta, offering an exceptional liberal arts education from a Christian perspective. King's degree programs integrate internships, work learning, study abroad experiences, and research opportunities. The King's University, bright hope for tomorrow.
All right, guys, so far so good. What do you guys think?
This episode?
Like, you like the topic?
Yeah,
working out?
Yeah. It's fun.
I do.
It was originally going to be one episode, and we are getting, we're kind of over three quarters of the way through, and we're halfway through my thing. So we'll do a few episodes about this. The second part, and before I hit the second part of the book, I just want to say one thing too about this particular book, The Anxious Generation. Like, it is, some would call it pop science. Okay, so it's a little bit like the airport bestseller.
Yeah.
Freakonomics, Malcolm Gladwell books. They're really good, but you got to be careful when you read those books. Like, they're not science journals. They're often drawing like correlation when there might not be, you know, causation. Mm-hmm. So like I want to be careful too. Like, this book I think is really interesting. It's really good food for thought. I think there's a lot of truth in it, but it's also not absolute.
But my response to that would be like, nobody reads science journals.
No, exactly.
So at least this is getting a message out. But your concern is, what if the message isn't?
Mike, I don't think
the guy's researching and doing his
stuff. There's a lot of research. The whole last third is articles. I do believe in it a lot. I just want to say, like, preface it by, like, it's not necessarily like the 100% truth. Like, I think we're still learning.
Sure.
It's a new frontier. I love the book. I'm not saying I don't, but I want to preface it by saying, like, we can't just.
And don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Thank you. Yeah. Right. Yeah. The basket eggs. Yeah.
Got it.
So the book is about anxiety and depression, and a couple things that he starts off with. So cell phone and social media use. So we can maybe just focus on social media and not cell phones as much at this point, right? Like, I think cell phones mean a lot of things. Let's just focus on social media in particular. Do you guys know the year where the stats they do have, or the years where the rise in anxiety and depression is most notable, especially in young people? Would you be able to guess the year or years?
like when anxiety, those levels went up in young people?
They've been steadily going up since the 90s, but they really, there's a spike that continues to go even today to very high levels. Well, but what?
Do you want to go first?
No.
I'm just curious if you guys have a thought
on that. Well, I think 2020 would have been a huge spike, but there was probably a spike like 2012 maybe.
Okay, Tyler?
2010-ish. I don't know.
Okay, you guys are both kind of right. One of the arguments he does address is the COVID years. But it seems clear to me, and you can read the book for yourselves too, that this spike happened well before 2020. It didn't help things, of course, but but the very noticeable spike was well before that.
We were trending way up
already. We were already trending up, and 2012 is pretty much correct, and so is 10. Like 10 to 12 is kind of where he points to. Do you know what precipitated it? Like what about those years?
Well, the social iPhone must have come up out in right around then.
So it's iPhone 4 in that era.
iPhone was 2006 or 8.
Yeah. It did take a few years for a lot of...
But like iPhone it always does. With the apps, that would be usable.
He says Instagram buys... Or Facebook buys Instagram is huge. And front-facing cameras is huge. They're just trends that sort of set things in motion. But and it did take a few years for most people to have cell phones, just like any technology. But he sort of figures, if you look at a lot of the data, and you know the graphs are pretty clear. And we'll get to the nature of the data in a little bit, because there are detractors who would say, well, that's self-reporting, and so people are just self-reporting more than they ever did.
And we're asking about it too. Riggin' time.
Was there? Like there's some variables, like you mentioned, like COVID would be a variable that affected everybody, whether they were on social media or not. Mm-hmm. But is there any research that separates the two? So like in 2012, it looks at young people who had access or who were social media users versus young people who were not.
Nope. It talks about, well, again, I don't remember those exact, but I do know that there are percentages of students that had cell phones with social media, mm-hmm. and they're quite high already.
Yeah.
And then there's just general data about those age groups having severe spikes.
So is that a correlation?
So you could argue that, right?
Yeah. So as the use of social media goes up, so does anxiety.
Sure. So
I think that's a strong... I'm not downplaying that correlation, but that's different from saying...
It's not having like a study group that's showing we tested this group with phones and this group without.
But I feel like that study is there. I feel like I have read that research.
I'm sure there are. I think there's all... He throws a lot of graphs at you in the early goings.
Yeah.
One thing he does a lot is he does address, like people say, well, there's wars and there's inflation and there was 9/11 and there was gun violence and there's overreporting. And he just tried to parse out like, well, none of those timelines really line up like this does. Like he sort of shows like he thinks the most clear causation would be cell phone social media. I agree with him personally. Yeah. I totally agree with it.
What he's saying is we see this huge spike in the case of self-reporting of anxiety and depression. And at the same time, the accessibility of phones and social media happened at exactly the same
time. And not just in one country. He looks at many different countries, and there's some we don't have a lot of data on, but like there's a lot of countries where he says, you know, like 9/11, for instance, or whatever it is, like there are certain countries where certain factors you wouldn't figure would affect them, but it does at the same time. So you can look into it. Like if you're skeptical, and many are, there's probably a lot of, but when I read the data, it's hard to argue in my mind. It really is. So this is an easy question for you guys, but there's data. They measure each demographic. What do you think is the hardest hit demographic from 2012 onwards in terms of depression and anxiety? Age, gender, what do you think is like particularly...
Teenagers?
I'm going to say female teenagers.
Yeah. So it's preteen girls are hit the hardest easily. Boys are hit hard in different ways that we'll get into later on. But in terms of just anxiety, depression, preteen girls. Why is that, Tyler?
The body image comparison.
Okay. Put you on the spot, but
I would say my guess would be that, plus the fact that on social media you say and read things you wouldn't say or hear face to face.
Right. So the like friendship, like bullying online, and
or insulting or whatever that is.
And comparing yourself to like how those things overlap too.
And you don't get a break from it.
Right.
Do you guys think, like, just, I know I haven't really shown you the data. We can look at some of the stuff after, but like, when you hear this, like, is there any skepticism in you guys? Like, when I say there's potentially this causation between social media and anxiety and depression, like, is there any question in your guys' mind that is happening and has happened? Or is over-reporting actually more of an issue?
So I get to see the referrals to community liaison workers and who are basically social workers in our schools and school counselors in our district of 11,000 students. And it is a steady trend upwards over the years of visits for especially middle school age kids mm-hmm. to those services.
Okay.
Because of self-reporting,
yeah.
anxiety, and depression.
Yeah.
So no, this doesn't surprise me one bit.
Yeah. No, I'm not skeptical of that. I see how someone could discount I see how someone could be skeptical about it.
Yeah.
But I haven't read, like, I don't have it with me, but I have read something recently about how the preteens and the teenagers who grew up through the early 2000s are now adults. Mm-hmm. And now we can see their mental health. And you can compare those that grew up with a cell phone and social media versus those who did not. And now it's kind of separating the, like, that variable out. Mm-hmm. And those who grew up with access to social media are much more likely to be dealing with mental health issues as an adult.
Right.
And I wasn't prepared for that. But, like, that's to me more compelling. And I don't know how you argue with that. Whereas if you just said, yeah, we're getting more anxious and we have more phones, like, I get how there's...
Yeah, that's correlation.
There's room for people to be skeptical there.
Right. Okay, so that, I just think it's easy to, like, read something that already, like, confirms what you believe.
But anecdotally, in our experience, we're not just parents of 2 to 3 to 4 kids. We're also having relationships with hundreds of kids every year over the last, like, I've known hundreds of kids every year for the last 25 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's not just, I guess, is that anecdotal? But I mean, there's trends within that I can see that yeah. show that kids are more often dealing with suicidal ideation, depression, anxiety more often now than they used to be.
Yeah.
Maybe that's anecdotal because it's not like a scientific survey. I'm not sure anecdotal ends
and data begins. I mean,
but that has to be a data set of some kind.
Yeah. Well, and there are, right? There are. But I think you nailed it, and I do think we have a unique perspective. That when I spent part of this week reading rebuttals to this book or skepticism, I kept thinking, yeah, but you're wrong. Like, you haven't been in a classroom for 15 years. Like, I had those same thoughts where I'm like, well, if you've seen what I've seen, you actually would be a little more understanding and empathetic and forgiving of.
Were there any compelling counter arguments?
Well, yes, there were. A lot of them dig into the studies themselves, right, that he'll reference. And a lot of them are partial. A lot of them have a small participation count. A lot of them, it's cherry picking certain parts of data. Like, there are some issues. I don't think fundamental flaws, but there's no data set that's perfect. So I think it's compelling, but I also think at a certain point, it's really hard, right? Like, we learn about inductive reasoning in math, where inductive reasoning is just making an educated guess. Like, you see something so many times that you say, this is the pattern I'm seeing. Is that a proof? No, but quite often it is true, right? And I
wonder, even if it's not, like, if you're making policy or decisions based on an educated guess, I think we do that all the time, right? So when I think about this phone thing, even if we're wrong and it is not the phones and the access to social media that's causing this breakdown of mental health, what is our resistance to, like, why are we so opposed to trying to take it away? Like, what stops us? Like, because if there's other areas in life where we're like, I'm not sure if this is really what's causing harm, but let's stop doing it anyways.
Well, if it's if someone believes it's not causing harm, it's a pretty huge hassle to take phones out of schools, right? Isn't it?
Is it though? Like because well, of I don't the know. Pushback.
It'll
like, make people like.
I've had some discussions.
Kind of annoyed. Like, what's the? It's not to me like when somebody. Well,
I think there will be a big pushback, and there will be a lot of people annoyed. But,
is that the barrier?
That's my question. Is like if on one hand you're saying we're trying to like protect your kids from like depression, and on the other hand it's like, but then I can't be in contact with my kid as conveniently, even if it's not right. Like even if we're not 100% sure it's the social media that's causing the spike in depression, why are we so resistant to trying?
I think that's my worst fear, is that like we're coming at it from a place of, I think we get fired up because we care, and I'm not saying parents don't, I'm just saying as a society, and we're in the business of caring for kids, we have a desire for emotional, physical, spiritual, psychological health of the people that we serve. And we think there's a relationship between I'm holding up a cell phone, and that health of our of kids.
Right.
So that makes us concerned. My worst fear is that people go, yeah, we see the evidence, but it doesn't outweigh the convenience of having a phone in my kid's pocket. Yeah. Ugh.
Yes.
Yeah. we're getting to be about an hour here. So what I want to say to you guys right now, we'll do one more segment. We'll put a kind of a pin in the book for now. Like I know we didn't really get into a ton of detail. The book actually outlines four things that we should be doing right now, like recommendations based on what the data shows. They're not surprising things, but the problem with the ideas are that they're a collective. Like they have to be done by a group at the same time, right? That's what makes this so hard. But I think schools, it's an amazing opportunity for schools to do something collective, right? Like they can make a humongous, I believe they can make a humongous change for students by just making a hard decision, taking those phone calls. I hope they do it. I don't know. Like I've thought about like writing emails and doing petitions and like being like, we got like, what are we doing? What are we doing here? Like there's boys watching porn in my math class. Probably like there's things happening in our schools that we can control to an extent that we can not solve, but if we can take that distraction and that social media and that source of their depression out of their hands for 7 hours a day, do we not have a moral obligation to do that? Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. The choir right here.
No, I know, but. And but I just can't believe there's enough people that would push back on that. And I would love to hear from
you. But I wonder, Graham, did it take you some time to get to this spot on this chair right now where you're this, I don't want to say elevated because I don't think you're elevated, but I mean this, I don't know what the word is.
Like,
convinced.
Yeah.
Or have you been this convinced for a long time?
No, I don't think I've been this convinced for a long time. I just like, I guess I just, I woke up one day and I thought like, I can't believe it's gotten this bad, maybe. Like, I just, yeah, I don't know, Chris. That's a good question.
Earlier on, you asked how this reminds me of something we were talking about before, about how our opinions about it have changed or our views on it. And I feel like for me, my frustration used to be more focused on myself. Like, how am I going to manage these distractions
in class?
This
is a pain for me.
Yeah, it's a pain for me, which
it still is.
Hell yeah. Kinda, but like if we take the phones out, there's still going to be kids who are distracted and not paying attention. Like, it is not. So that has kind of declined, but then phones kind of became a non-issue to me in recent years. But now they're coming back as a concern, but in a very different way than they were 3 or 4 years ago, where it was like, this is a pain. How are we going to manage this? And now it's just like, I think what kind of I'm in line with Graham. We're like, why are we not? How did we get so complacent and just be kind of okay with where we're at now? Mm-hmm. So when I talk to students about it, it's not like I'm not upset at them really at all when I see them on their phone. I'm a little annoyed that I am dealing with it, but in the same way I'd be annoyed if a kid is drawing a penis on the desk. Like, there's other things students can do that annoy me.
Yeah.
But the phone thing is like a much bigger thing, and it's about them. I'm worried about them.
I'm hopeful that it is like advertising with Joe Camel to kids for cigarettes. Like, I'm hoping districts and school boards look at the data, right? and they think and they do what they should do with that information. That right, as simple as that, really. That's how these institutions should work, right? You know that. Like, it's all research based. Everything we talk about is research based. Okay. Well, I do promise the next time I do an episode, we will maybe talk. It does go deeper into the how. Like, he talks about the rewiring of young brains. Like, there is research and information about that we will get into.
Ken, we don't want to leave it like dire. Like, are kids resilient? Are adults resilient enough to undo the harm that potentially phones have done?
No, we're hooped. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
No.
Mic drop.
I'm not done.
Wilhelm scream.
I'm actually not done. I actually have one more segment where I want read some things that students told me.
Do it.
You might find hope in that. I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, so we'll close the episode here, part one of our cell phone talk. I did some surveys with all of my students, anonymous surveys. They were really helpful. It was really wonderful. I had some discussions, too. I might even throw some of their audio clips in this episode throughout, just how they reacted to some of my questions. But I read through them all, and I gathered some data. A quick question. What do you guys think the average age? So I asked them all the age they first had access to social media. What do you guys think? And I added up, and I found the average. Not the mean, like, yeah, the average age.
Even though every social media app doesn't allow you to sign up till you're 13, the average age is 11, I'm going to say. 11?
Okay.
I was going to say 12.
Okay, 10 and a half or so is okay. When I did the math, which I was expecting it to be lower than I thought. That was even lower than I expected. I thought that was, and a lot of kids, 6, 7, 8 years old on Instagram. Anyway, so one of the questions I asked them was the link between mental health and social media. Okay, so generally speaking, what do you guys think 14, 15, 16 year olds, what would you think they would, do you think they would agree with the link between social media and mental health issues? Think they would see it and recognize it?
I think they do. They're not dumb.
Yeah, they're not dumb.
No. Yeah, I think they'd acknowledge.
And speaking of acknowledging, I should probably say this is not like a scientific study. This is me just asking for some feedback, right? I'm not pretending this is everything, but here's some quotes. If you guys find them interesting, let me know. Here's a student who spends 6 hours a day on social media. They said, we have unlimited access to everything through social media. That also means young girls are exposed to popular diets, what body type is in season. Being exposed to that much is very draining to someone's mental health.
Hmm. I bet.
Yeah. And there's actually tons of feedback about that, about body image and makeup and hair and like looking a certain way. And that got very tiring to read that after a while, and very sad to read that, like just how aware of it they are. I think it's part of self-image. You see celebrities, and as a teenage girl, you compare yourself. I think it has to do with not having real face-to-face communication for long periods of time. People need to experience each other. And that's someone who spends 3 hours on Snapchat a day and 3 hours on TikTok a day. Here's a response when I asked about the link between social media and mental health. It's not related. It just depends on how a person makes decisions for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
This person purports...
I can see kids saying that.
This person spends 10 hours and 14 minutes a day on social media.
That's very specific. 10 hours and 14
minutes. Yeah, that may have been just the day. The day before. Funny enough, they were checking their phones to give me accurate data on how many hours.
Wow.
Nothing surprising so far, obviously. Like, but there were quite a few like that.
Like that third one?
But I think a lot of people say, I see that there's a link, but it isn't going to affect me. I bet that's a common...
Yeah, I wouldn't say that's maybe a ton, actually. No. There's. I would say 3/4 said, yes, it affects mental health negatively.
Including my own?
Yeah. And a quarter would say things like, quote, I don't think electronics are to blame. I think social media is to blame. That's different. But yeah, like the last one, it's not related. Some people just wrote, it's not related. Or just make better choices. Or it's your fault if that's what the stuff you look at.
Yeah.
Right. Which I think...
Which is true, too.
Yeah. But I mean, you don't discount the power of these programs,
right?
Like, designed to target. I mean, they
understand your brain chemistry.
Yeah.
Psychologists are employed by their companies to make these things addicting. And the makers of these programs don't let their own kids on their cell phones or programs, like, because they know how powerful they are.
Quote, trying to fit a standard when nobody online actually cares. It's easy to get lost. Huh. You could have the best day ever, go on your phone for an hour, and everything changes.
Wow. That's
4.5 hours of Snapchat a day alone. I'm not using names. I'm using stats for each person.
Yeah.
That kid's going to be like, that's me.
Right. Yeah, I guess so.
I got a shout out.
Yeah. When I was younger with no social media, I remember distinctly playing outside a lot more and I wasn't always doing something. Sometimes I'd just do nothing. Now I find nothing a lot more boring than it used to be. I just think that's like a beautiful and sad
statement.
That's kind
of like a cute.
Right?
Yeah.
I find nothing a lot more boring. And I often tell my kids that like we're bored. It's like, that's sweet. You should be bored. That's awesome.
Because that's...
This student said they spend 4 hours today on Instagram and they're usually up to 1 or 2 a.m. on their phone.
Yeah.
And that's not
uncommon. Sleep patterns, I'm sure, are just brutal for kids.
It's another segment we could talk about the data, right? Okay, and then I asked them, so I will say generally, I mean, you've had discussion with your students too, Tyler, like generally they're not dumb. They know there's a link. A lot of them experience that for themselves. But then I asked them, okay, well, what do you think we should we ban, like what happens if they ban cell phones in schools or should we ban cell phones in schools? You can probably guess they were less willing to accept that.
Well,
no, my mental health and focus is fine with or without my phone. It just depends on what the person chooses to focus on. That's a person with 6.5 hours a day on social media. Hey, quote, kids know how bad phones are. They also have the power to quit on their own. Kids who are addicted will just stay home. That's a 40-minute a day person.
Hmm.
Pretty low, actually. Don't ban them because students will just bring a second phone and they'll still use it. That's a 5 hour a day kid who said they first got social media at the age of 8.
Wow.
As much as I want to say no, the answer is yes. It definitely would get students more engaged as well as help students become more socially active. This person got Snapchat at age 12. No, don't ban them. It would cause a riot. This kid is 7.5 hours a day on social media and they're usually up to 3 or 4 a.m. Quote, no, you're making life boring. 3 hours a day. In my opinion, banning all cell phones in school could be able to increase the morale of students through decreasing the source of distraction and stress. However, we need to have a time where students can contact their guardians or parents when an emergency happens. What do you guys think about that? Like a lot of people and parents will say that. If there's an emergency, I need to get in touch with my kid. I think we'd all want to ban cell phones. How would you respond to that, Chris?
Give me an example of what you think is an emergency, first of all. Like... I'm going to be 5 minutes late for pickup, not an emergency. And in, like, we've had offices in schools since schools have existed in order to pass information along. So, like, that kid's going to be fine. And we've got, whether you believe we've been here for 6,000 years or 600,000 years, humans have handled life without cell phones up until this generation. So, we're going to be okay. But it's going to be painful ripping that band-aid off. Like, really painful.
How many phone calls are principals getting
because
per day?
Because I wonder, like, maybe we'll get into this in a further episode, too. The dopamine squirt and the, you know, those things, those chemicals that are happening in our brain because of phones, too, make this literally an addiction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it will be really hard to undo what we've done.
That's my, when you read some of those quotes about you just got to make better decisions. If you were to say that to an addict, but then say, okay, it's like, it's your fault. You just don't do that drug or drink that alcohol, but go ahead and carry it around in your pocket all day or sit in this room where you're surrounded by people doing it all day.
Yeah.
Like that's not fair. Like to just say it's their choice. If there's things we can do to help, then we should.
Can you guys, like, what do you think? I sometimes walk around the school and I have this romanticized view. If there were no cell phones in kids' hands, what would our school hallways and our classrooms look like? Do you ever think about that? In the long term, maybe not the first couple of days, but.
I want that.
Yeah.
But I do wonder, like, if we idealize that because that's what we had.
Yeah.
So it's like, it would be so good because that's what we grew up
that's
with.
That's what I had. Yeah.
But, like, So I do think that way a little bit, but I also, it might not be that different, or even if it isn't any different, but we're keeping kids from anxiety and depression, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But I do think it would be, in my opinion, I would like to see it. Yeah. When I walk through the hallway, I'd like to see kids talking to each other instead of looking at their phones.
I've told this to a few, I think maybe years before, there was a morning where I was particularly aware of the, I was reading this book, and so I was more aware of anxiety, depression, suicidal thoughts, all kinds of terrible things. And I'm sitting there and all these kids are in my room 10 minutes before class and the sun is rising. I have a nice view of the sunrise in my classroom. And the sun's coming in and I've got probably 9 kids and 8 of them are just, their head is down and their phone is right in their face. And one kid in the middle, he told me he forgot his phone at home. And he was sitting there like staring out, like at the sunrise, just like kind of staring at it. And I want to get a picture of this like moment. It was like this crazy, like, you know what I mean? Like this profound,
it's like,
teared up a little bit where it just, he's looking up at
the,
yeah.
I didn't realize the sun still rose and set.
Yeah, it sounds a little cheesy, but it was quite a, yeah. Quote, yes, I'm not happy to agree with this, banning phones, but logically it's the best decision. I am personally distracted by my phone if it is close to me. Banning phones will make students communicate verbally more and socialize.
Yeah.
And that student got TikTok at age 9. I can't imagine a kid 8 or 9 having TikTok. I don't understand.
You know, even parents following the rules of social media for their children would make a difference.
Yeah.
But we don't even have that, right? No. Like,
well, like DeSantis in Florida, not a politician I'm a fan of, but saying we're going to ban.
I'm a fan of that decision.
Me too. But then you wonder, how do you do that? I wish,
I think somehow they're trying to cut the feed to that in their state. I don't know how, is that even possible?
I'm not sure. Or self, yeah. There are ways to do it for sure. I think you're right. I think if they just follow the, because Instagram, is it 12, 14? I forget
I think they're all 13. Facebook was, Instagram was. I don't know if they've changed that, but.
I have a lot more quotes. You guys can read them later if you'd like to, but I'll end with this one. I did ask them also my last question. I asked them a bunch, but I said, I asked them, I have little kids, so what age should I let my kids use social media? I thought that would get them thinking. There were quite a lot of answers that were just like 13 years old, 15 years old. Like I had a lot of that, but then this one answer I quite liked. It says, I don't like this answer. It's pretty sad, but it's thoughtful. I would say 15 to 16 or older. I want them to be smart enough not to make stupid decisions. I also hate the fact that I was raised on screens and no one had time for me face to face. I would rather die than put my kid through that.
Wow.
That's a kid that says they spend 7 hours a day on TikTok. That kind of hit. Like, oof. Like these students, like they, it helped for me to talk to them because they know what they're talking about. Like they know it. But the sad thing is like they still spend 7 hours a day on something. And yeah. So anyway, that's kind of what I had for tonight. Tyler, what are your thoughts?
I thought you said the last segment would maybe bring some hope.
Yeah, I forgot about that last quote.
No.
The hope is that the students are aware. And I think in general, this whole idea of self-reporting or like being aware, like I think it's a good thing when they're more aware of that and open about it.
And I think the cultural kind of reawakening to that's the right. issue. Right, it's not just an annoyance at school. It's like, okay, it's a bigger issue than that.
What's hopeful to me too is that parents and schools and we're waking up to the fact that there's actually a problem. Because I think we've danced around that a bit and made excuses for it, and we're getting past that as a society.
Man, I wonder, like, we do a talk like in a year from now, you know, like if Alberta Ed does something with this survey, or our district does, or something. Tyler, what do you, just kind of closing here, we could talk all night, Tyler or Chris, but like, I think another high school in town does the phones and locker thing. So like, just not in classrooms.
Yeah.
That seems like generally, like when I was looking at some stories across the country and even the United States, that's more common. Like during breaks, lunch, fine.
Yeah. We're essentially cyborgs. This part of your body is going to be put away till you're allowed to use it.
Yeah. I guess obviously I would love them to be banned completely, but maybe that's hard to police between classes, really.
Yeah. What do I think about that?
Like if you had it your way, what would your cell phone policy be in high school?
Well, I think not at all, but I would accept, you know what? I think not at all, or like before and after school. Cause I think even the lunch time or students talk about their breaks being their time. I think,
yeah, that's where they need to engage with other kids.
There's a lot of other healthier things you could be doing.
Full Luddite between 8:15 and 3:15.
Yeah. Also, I already have kids that go to use, quote, the washroom and come back in 15 minutes. Imagine if their phone was in their locker, what they'd be doing. They'd be asking to use the washroom every 5 minutes to go to their locker. We just need a giant basket in the front of the school for 1,000 cell phones.
Yeah.
And EMPs in every, or jammers in every room.
I had students ask if, well, what if they, would you have to give your phone up too? Yes. And I said I would, yeah. Like for the, it would be hard. And like, yeah. They're like, well, why don't you do it then? I'm like, because I don't want to, just like you don't want to.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's, I would need something outside of me. I need help. And I think you do too. You just, it's hard to admit it.
I would say, hey, Heidi, phone me with the school phone and email me if you need something. Done.
Yeah.
Wouldn't take that. Wouldn't be that hard. Well, guys, that closes up that episode and that topic.
Good discussion, Graham. Thanks for bringing it.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll have to read the book too. It's really well done. I didn't mean to call it pop science in a negative way, just to be aware that it is a book that's designed to be entertaining, but also, yeah.
Get you thinking and talking.
Yeah. Well, which we should close up.
Which it did.
It did. Thank you, Jonathan. Is it Haidt? Haidt?
He'd be a good guest, surprise guest for our third episode on this.
I did consider it, but then I looked into it and he is quite popular on some bigger podcasts. Ah. So you never know, but all right, cool. Well, maybe we'll close up with some confessions and call it a night.
All right.
Sometimes when you're hanging out with your dudes and your buddies and your friends and your guys in one of their homes, so I should host one. So I assumed you were going to host tonight. I said, hey, would you host?
Gotcha. And I was like, does Graham, like, yeah. Does he ever have you there? Not in a judgmental way.
No.
Like she thinks we're missing out for not getting to check out your place.
No, I have a nice space that I want to do it in, but like, yeah. I feel like my kids, like I want them to go to sleep. Like, I feel like
they'd come and check it out. And
if we start recording a bit later, we could probably do it.
Then you just give them your phone and they'd.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Fall asleep. Hey, just a quick amendment on the last segment. All those quotes that I was reading about kids and the hours they used, that was just social media hours. That wasn't screen time.
Jeez.
Because a lot of them asked me, is this screen time? I said, no, I'm talking about TVs. I'm just talking about social media, but to make it more depressing. Anyway, when you're hanging out with your dudes, you want to do some recommending or some confessing. And I don't have to because I hosted the topic. So, Tyler, what do you got?
Yeah, I already confessed kind of my story of not knowing how to donate blood with children. So I'm going to recommend now something from Blind Man Brewing.
Yes.
We love them and we love their products. We love the people. But they have a product that I think you guys have all tried. It's called Wander Hop Water.
No, I'm not.
You haven't? It's non-alcoholic and it's sparkling water.
Ooh.
Kind of like a bubbly, which we all know our feelings about bubbly and how those have changed over time.
Oh,
but
man.
This, I think it's much better than a bubbly. Oh, wow. Like there's more flavor. Citrusy, kind of hoppy. Huh. I wouldn't say it's like beer flavored, but there's some definite hoppiness there.
Yeah.
Super
like
good.
No sugar, no
zero calories. It's what? Like, yeah, it's
haven't even heard very of this. Good.
Yeah,
the branding's quite cool too. You'll like it.
Yeah, it's like a fox with sunglasses.
Definitely have to try this.
Yeah, it's
stores
very good.
Or just at the brewery?
No, you can get it in cans at you can get it a few places around. Like I've seen it around in like little niche places, like in Lacombe at Ona, but you can probably get it at a liquor store even or a grocery store somewhere.
What if it's out at a liquor store, not being alcoholic?
Smart for a brewery to make sparkling water.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's that's my official recommendation.
That's a good one.
At the tap room, they do sell a number of other, if you don't like beer, like there are lots of other options if you just want to go enjoy some of the tasty treats they create.
Yeah.
There's lots of options.
My recommendation is also going to be a beverage, and it was consumed by me at the Rundle Bar at the Banff Springs Hotel. Humble brag that I got to go to the Banff Springs Hotel. The Rundle Bar is a really fancy little bar there with expensive drinks. This drink is expensive. It's called Iconic Peak. And I guess they have a series of drinks, one for each Fairmont Hotel in the Rockies. So there's a drink made for the Jasper Park Lodge, Lake Louise Lodge, and the Banff Springs Inn.
That's cool.
But their drink at Iconic Peak, if you get a chance to go, please try it. I'm going to try to make it. I got the recipe. I should have had it here so I could read what's in it. But it's mostly port and bourbon with honey water and a couple flavored juices. And it sounds like way too much going on, but it just makes for one delicious drink.
Okay.
I'll make you guys one once I get the recipe down.
Yeah.
So you got one like very complicated drink and one very simple drink.
That's right.
How was the Banff Springs Hotel?
Tiny rooms, little beds.
Yeah.
Great pool. Awesome conference.
Cool.
Overpriced.
All right. Well, speaking of overpriced, we're all done here. Didn't make sense. Do any feedback? We usually kind of do feedback near the end these days.
Yeah, a little mailbag. Like,
if you're still with us, you may as well stay a little longer.
Yeah. Well, while I'm pulling up, maybe Chris can tell us how you could also...
Well, since we've been spent an hour and 10 minutes trashing social media, we will now say, if you're on it for 6.5 hours anyway, you may as well check out our Instagram feed. But our way to get a hold of us, if you're going to send an email, is harmoniousgentleman@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. And I'm in our inbox right now just reading a message that we received from a guest or a listener who would like to remain anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And they are responding. the subject line says impact of deterministic view. So they're responding to our last episode about free will. And it's well written and it's funny, but it's long. So I'm just going to right now pick and choose what I'm going to share from here.
Yeah.
And at the beginning, he does say, here are my thoughts in point form, followed by ChatGPT rewriting in paragraph form, basically what he had said.
Oh, man, what a world we're living in. Yeah.
So but then when I read it, I actually thought his paragraph was better than the ChatGPT version. So good job, Anonymous.
Nice job, listener. Anonymous.
But anyway, here's what he has to say. Every choice is a product of the circumstances. Every circumstance is made from the prior circumstance. Circumstances include what we ate for breakfast, amount of sleep we got, how we were raised, the laws and norms, societal pressures, the sensory input from the environment. Like dominoes that were pushed from the beginning of the universe and ongoing. If we were to go back in time and given exactly the same set of conditions, we would do exactly the same thing. This viewpoint forces us to have patience and grace for other people's unfavorable actions or disagreeable viewpoints. They were doing the best or only thing they could given the circumstances. Their viewpoints were created by external and internal factors that they didn't have control over. This leads to questions about why we punish other people. If they didn't have free will and couldn't have done otherwise, is it really their fault? Punishment or consequences are still necessary, but not because they're deserved. There to influence or discourage future behaviors. What do you guys think? He's a pretty smart guy.
Yeah.
Anonymous has got it going on.
Yeah. I really loved the, so it sounds like he agreed actually with, maybe I like it because it's, yeah, I think I agree with this guy on his view on determinism. But the part that I loved was this kind of about empathy or, that they were doing the best they could given their circumstances. Whether you are a determinist or you believe in free will, I think that's a good takeaway.
And I think that ties into what we've talked about tonight too.
Totally.
Like if you are compelled or encouraged to do something or like you have to because those around you are doing it or a decision has been made for you and now you have no choice, that sort of all fits in.
Thanks, Anonymous, and everyone else for the many emails. We can't read them all, but we try to.
Yeah.
Okay. So get in touch with us on social media, Instagram. Right.
Well, and we have this tongue-in-cheek poking fun at that, but it's also, I think, a little bit about our own turmoil and complicated relationship we have to social media. Like, we get it. We're on it, too.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't be there so much. But, you know, if you're going to spend a little bit of time on it, look us up.
I'm currently on, you know how we have these like get rid of all the social media apps for a while and then get them on again.
Yeah,
I'm currently on a down cycle. So no Threads, no Reddit.
Good for
both
you.
Off my phone. But now with the playoffs starting up, I kind of want to check the Canucks and the hockey subreddits and for highlights and, you know.
I got rid of Reddit in December, have never gone back.
Oh, good for you.
And I have checked Twitter on my computer, not on my phone. It's completely off.
Yeah.
And I've gone down some weird conspiratorial things.
On Twitter?
And I notice when I do that it impacts me greatly.
Yeah.
Because I start thinking, am I part alien? Etc.
Well, next time we'll delve into that. But thanks for listening, everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you very much.
And thanks for having us, Chris.
Anytime.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll see you next time.
Okay. On?
The
Harmonious
HGP.
You got
podcast.
It.